Good morning, everybody, and welcome into the Mary Griffith Show. I am Scott Hardy, in for Mary. Coming up on 9:18, time now for this half of the show. It's a Best of the Mary Griffith Show, which originally aired late last month. It's about the Teresa Adams House, and that is at on North 11th Street on the campus of Blessing Hospital, and it offers overnight lodging for people who need medical treatment at Quincy Medical Group, Blessing, or any Quincy facility as well.
Guest, does it matter how close I sit to the microphone? Yes. Try to be in the same room would be the first thing, and then do what Shelley Steinkamp is doing. She knows exactly how to play this game. Let me tell you, she's right up on top of her microphone. We're going to talk today about really one of the unsung places in Quincy. The good news is, if you really don't know about it, then you really have never needed it, and I guess that's a good thing. The bad news is, you may not need it, but it's needed in our community, so we're going to try to do some public education about the Teresa Adams House, formerly known as Quincy's Hospitality House. So I'm going to let Shelley Willer Steinkamp introduce herself and the new executive director. Please give us an introduction of yourself and what you do at the home.
Oh, absolutely.
And then tell us a little bit about the newbie that we have brought into the fold.
Absolutely.
Here.
You know, I don't even remember how many years I've been on the board, because I don't think I've ever gotten off. It's like 10 years or something. But I've been helping with fundraising, which is absolutely fun. That's the funnest part of being on the board. But I'm really excited now to introduce our new house coordinator. I want to call her a director, but I'm told it's officially Teresa Adams House Coordinator, Angie Peters. And she has a lot of experience with the house, a lot of experience at Blessing Hospital. Tell me, what is your experience? What were you doing before you became, because I know you were on the board, you were helping us as secretary. What did you do before that?
Sure. Well, I started at Blessing in 2020 in the wonderful world of COVID. I was a health surveillance screener, and then a couple years later, I took on the role of secretary for volunteer services. And then I started training over at the Teresa Adams House. And then when Becky retired last month, I took on the role.
So you have a wide range of experience working with volunteers.
Absolutely, yes.
Which is the key thing in the Teresa Adams home, because it is run almost exclusively by volunteers.
Absolutely, it is.
And that's what makes it so great. Shelley Steinkamp, explain, the Teresa Adams home is in its new location. You've been there for a year now, though, at least, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, more than
almost
a year.
Almost two.
Yeah, 2 years, yeah.
And I know that COVID slowed things down just because of supply chain. Like, you couldn't get washers and dryers.
Right.
We talked to Harvey's Furniture this morning. They said they provided the mattresses
for the thing.
But, you know, there's always these supply chain issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's all behind us now. So talk about how the building is right there on the campus, and it blends in so architecturally with everything else, people may not even know where it is or what it is when they look at that building. They think it's a doctor's office, maybe.
Right. And it is, honestly, when you step inside, it's like a resort. I mean, we have security, but it is a resort. It is nicer than a hotel because it feels like home. We have a large kitchen area. We have snacks and small food items and drinks for whoever is visiting. The rooms are just beautiful. Walk-in showers now. The bedding is super comfortable because, yes, I was one that went out to Harvey's and tested the furniture. Christina, that's another one of my duties. Yeah, I get to do that. And we did get two different kinds of mattresses, too, so we could please everyone. But and the handy thing is Blessing, you know, refers us. People that are in the hospital will get referrals, but we also get them from Illinois Veterans Home and different homes around the area. So we serve a wide range of people that I'm not sure everyone knows about. And so it's just a great place. And we have people that, you know, have to come back because, of course, they have a loved one in. And another thing I don't think people realize is that we also serve patients at Blessing. Let's say they go in and they have a treatment at Blessing, but they can't drive home. So they will go to Blessing, they'll have their treatment, and then they will go home. And, or they'll come to the house and they'll stay. They can have a shower. You know, they can rest up until they're able to go home. So that's another nice benefit. Maybe they're not even spending the night, but they can't drive, or they're waiting for a loved one to pick them up. So we have that. And we do, you know, because I'm always about fundraising. And Mary, there's no one more fun than you, other than maybe me. That's my middle name, too. But we have fundraisers, and this is going to be Angie's first year. I mean, she's been with us, but she's not been as involved. So she's super excited. She has the enthusiasm that we need in our house coordinator. And we're going to have Bar Olympics again this year. Such a big hit last year. And I'll be on to talk about that more closer to the event. But that's Saturday, September 28th. So everyone put that on your calendar because it is so much fun. It is not just a bags tournament. We have darts. We have pool. We have so many games. And we had so much fun last year. It was just a great day.
There are games I'd never even heard of that I ended up playing last year. My husband really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. Again, you don't have to be good at any of this stuff to go out and have a good time because you're raising money for the Teresa Adams Home. So that is exciting. And it since this is an Olympic year, you know, you have multiple things. It's kind of like the decathlon. You know,
right.
you would, if you're not strong in one, you can surge ahead with your team in
another
one. That's
right, and you don't have to pay. You don't have to go out of town. Right here in Quincy at the dock. I mean,
who wants to go to Paris when I can go down to the dock on the Mississippi River? I mean, really, there's no comparison.
I know, and you can get a dock T-shirt, you know? You can't get a T-shirt in Paris, but you can get a T-shirt at the dock, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, we have Teresa Adams House T-shirts as well.
Okay.
So we'll have those that day.
And then you have another fundraiser coming up at the end of the year.
We do, and I'm super excited because I had so many people last year that were disappointed we didn't have it last year. We couldn't get it together. So this year, we booked it early, December 4th, our popular holiday social, the Quincy Museum. I'm super excited because my friend Katie Roskamp is the new director, and so she's all fired up as well. It's going to be decorated beautifully like it always is. We'll have music. We always have great food, and it's going to be another fun way to enjoy the holidays to, you know, get your girlfriends together or get your employees together and spend a nice evening.
Yeah, it's a nice little way for especially small offices to just have an office party,
right.
And the company makes a contribution to the Teresa Adams Home. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be great. The Teresa Adams Home is right there. It's basically on the campus of Blessing Hospital. It's a hotel, really.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is it's nice, very nice, as any Hilton or Radisson you're going to stay at. It has all the amenities of a hotel room. Mm-hmm. It's all handicap accessible. There's no stairs and things like that. In the old hospitality house, you had some limitations because of the way the house was. This is all brand spanking new. It's all to accommodate people who are either unhealthy themselves and recovering or people who have raced in from out of town, and I shared with Angie my story that I've had to use a home like this in Chicago. Mm-hmm. When you would get a call that a loved one is ill, I mean, you just race to the bedside.
Right.
And then after you initially, you know, see them and get calmed down and realize that they're going to be there again tomorrow, but that you're also going to have to be there tomorrow and maybe the next day and maybe the next day to help take care of them and to be part of their, you start saying, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go?
Right.
And something similar to the Teresa Adams Home was offered in Chicago at Masonic Hospital. And, you know, you can never say enough about the people who made that happen there.
Right.
And we're going to talk a little bit about the people who make it happen here in Quincy. But first, we're going to take a break. When we come back, our conversation continues with the new house coordinator for the Teresa Adams Home, Angie Peters, and Shelley Steinkamp, who is on the board of directors and puts the fun in fundraising for the Teresa Adams Home. And again, anyone can use this. It's just like booking a stay in a hotel room, but it's not quite that expensive. It's at a reduced rate, and it is for people who either are undergoing a procedure themselves and can't drive themselves home after an outpatient stay, or for family members who, heaven forbid, I read them every morning, there's an ambulance brings you into the emergency room, and you've got to come and be with your friends or your family. We'll be right back. You do need people there, though, at different hours. So this is where some people say, well, you know, what kind of hours could I work? Because some people are really early risers. Some people are night owls. Do you have do you have volunteer shifts for them?
We do. We have, really, there's three shifts. There's 8 to noon, noon to 4, and 4 to 8. But with that being said, we're very flexible. If you want to come 8 to 10, 1 to 3, 4 to 6, we will not turn away a volunteer. So anytime they have available, we would love to have them.
And the Teresa Adams House, of course, if somebody comes in at midnight, the Blessing Hospital takes over helping to make sure they get into the home and everything like that. But the volunteers on the day-to-day basis are the ones that are there, like you said, making the beds, refreshing the rooms, just making sure that, that everybody is necessary. That you also need volunteers, I'm sure, Shelley, to do some of these fundraisers.
Oh,
you know?
We do.
Yeah.
In fact, I would love to have some people to get on my committee for fundraising, because we have a separate committee, so it's not all just the board members or anything. It's anyone that's interested in helping us with fundraisers, and they could do one fundraiser or all of our fundraisers. If they have another idea for a fundraiser, they can help us with that, too. So we're always looking for volunteers for that as well. And then our wish list, I don't want to forget about that, too.
Oh, yes,
too.
Please.
Mm-hmm. So we always need items on our wish list, and people can bring those by the house anytime they want, or we'll pick them up if they want to just call the house. But we need laundry detergent. We need coffee, the K-cups. We need the Swifters, the wet or dusting pads, toilet paper, paper towels, disinfectant spray, disinfectant wipes, hand soap, shaving cream, toothpaste, hotel-sized shampoos and lotions, coffee filters, copy paper, envelope shredder, a paper shredder. Do we not have a paper shredder?
No, we do not, but I didn't know that was on there.
Yeah, it is. So we need a paper shredder.
Well, those tend to burn up quick, you know.
They do.
Apparently, there's a lot of top secret documents that the hospitality house has been shredding, and now you've burned out your old one. Okay.
Yes. Postage stamps, insulated cups, and microwavable and shelf-stable meals, and individually wrapped foods like chips and granola bars, oatmeal, fruit cups, cans of soup and sure, things like that.
Because so people will be eating there, too.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
People come, and they do need a place, you know, something to eat, because they may come after the restaurants are all closed and stuff. So there's a lot that we can use as far as volunteers. And, you know, there is an incentive for a volunteer signing up. They could work with me.
Oh, my gosh.
And they
That's worth a
fun.
Million bucks.
They could have fun, Mary.
They could have
they
fun.
They could have fun.
They could have fun.
That's a perk. Now, Angie is fun, too.
Yeah. Like, I try to make it fun.
So we do try to make it fun because, you know, these people may
volunteers are great. It's
they
like,
are amazing.
What are they going to do, fire me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
you know.
A little bit something that we are a little better even than the hotel because we provide a warm personality is going to greet you. Someone with a warm smile. They are not there just to take your money and get your money and say goodbye to you and hand you a key. They're going to be there for any questions you have. If you need a shoulder to cry on, they're going to be there for you.
Okay. How can we get in touch if we want to be a volunteer at the Teresa Adams Hospitality House?
We have, you can go on to blessinghealth.org, their website, and go down to the bottom where it says volunteer. You could also just call the house at 217-228-3022, or you can always just stop by, 630 North 11th.
630 North 11th.
Uh-huh.
Drive by there, folks. If you're not familiar with where it is or what it looks like, it's a beautiful new building named in honor of Teresa Adams, one of the great volunteers, 630 North 11th. And that number again?
The phone number is 217-228-3022.
Okay. Well, we're out of time. Shelley Steinkamp and new house coordinator Angie Peters. Hope to have you back real soon. And remember, folks, mark your calendars for September 28th. For the Bar Olympics at the Dock, and December 4th for the Quincy Museum Mixer to benefit the Teresa Adams Home.
State Street Bank Trust Services takes the stress out of estate planning. Our experienced and compassionate trust...
Welcome back to the Mary Griffith Show. I'm Scott Hardy in for Mary at 941, and alongside now, Live in studio, Quincy Police Chief Adam Yates. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Doing good. Glad to have you here.
Good to be here.
We got the air working, so right. Yeah. It's a good thing for sure. And normally over the past few months, we've always made it a point to talk about the fact that, you know, the QPD was at, staffing shortages and all this and that. And it's been nice because over the past month or so, you've pretty much reached full staffing. But from what I understand now, you're hiring. But this instance, it's a little different, right?
It's always a little bit different in the police and fire world. We only accept new hire applications for 6 weeks every year. And then there's a testing process. And what happens then is we create a list of potential new hire candidates, and then we hire off of that list for the next 12 months. So the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners takes care of all that. And so it's one of those kind of odd things. If you want to be a police officer, now's the time to apply, because you have to be on that list, because when we have a vacancy 6 months from now, they'll hire off of that list. So it's important that we get the word out, that people submit applications and get the information in so they can be considered for employment.
Yeah, and the testing, I'm assuming, then will be coming up sometime a little bit later on?
Yeah, the testing is in August. There's a physical agility and a written test to start off, and then there are interviews that are conducted after that by the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners, and then I believe in October is when the list will be finalized, and that's what the board will then use for the remaining, until they test again, until the following October, to make any decisions on hiring.
Okay. And just to refresh people's memory, if you want to be a Quincy police officer, you don't have to live in the city of Quincy.
You do not. You have to, matter of fact, when you apply, you can live anywhere you want. But when you get hired within 6 months, you have to move within 40 miles of City Hall. So that basically extends into Missouri, Iowa, and encompasses Adams County.
How do you think that policy has worked so far for the department?
Well, so far I can tell you that we have at least one lateral transfer officer that is working for us and doing a good job, who is working for us absolutely because of that policy. He lives in Monroe City and was going to live in Monroe City and initially tested with the Hannibal Police Department, but once he heard that our policy had changed, he submitted an application for us. So, you know, we haven't seen a flux of officers moving into Missouri, you know, at this point. There may be a couple officers that are thinking about it, but I think what it's doing is it's expanding our candidate pool. And is giving us, you know, we obviously are looking for the most talented, the best police officers that we can probably get. So I think it's really helped in terms of our recruitment efforts. And it'll be interesting because this will be the first new hire pool that we put together with that policy in place. So we'll see where we're getting applications from.
Right, right. And it's you're really in a different place than the Quincy Fire Department, because news has come out even from the Hannibal Fire Department. They're saying that they're worried because they kind of been looking into the QFD situation and that they're going to have a lot of retirements. Chief Valcamp's going to have to worry about that over the next few years.
Yes.
You're not in that position.
Well, we have a lot of folks that are eligible for retirement, okay, but not many that have given us indications that they're going to retire. Now, we actually do have one vacancy right now, which was an officer that left our department to go to another department. But, you know, we anticipate that there's always an ebb and flow to this. You know, sometimes, you know, somebody that's eligible for retirement who may not be thinking about retirement all of a sudden finds a job or gets a job offer that says, you know, hey, if I don't take this now, then I may lose this opportunity, and they end up going, leaving us and going to that. So you never know exactly what's going to happen. That's why we always want to have a nice pool of qualified candidates to pull from, because we never know exactly when we're going to have an opening.
Right, right. Understand. Talking it over with Quincy Police Chief Adam Yates here on the Mary Griffith Show, coming up on 9:46. Do you notice anything different in terms of, like, people's behaviors with this heat? Does the heat actually work as kind of a deterrent for you?
I don't know if I would refer to it as a deterrent. We usually look at cold weather and rain as a deterrent, and that generally keeps folks inside, which keeps them from irritating one another. I think what most of us would tell you is that when it gets hot, even just summertime in general, when more people are outside, we obviously see an uptick in calls for service and issues a lot of times between neighbors or neighborhoods and things like that. So I think what you would say with extreme heat, aside from the safety concerns, we just see an uptick because I think people are just more irritable. I mean, they're hot. No one wants to be hot. No one wants to sit in a hot house without air conditioning or anything like that. So I don't think it deters folks. I think it may aggravate issues a little bit for us.
After I asked that, that's what I was thinking. It's like it's more of an irritant than anything else.
Right.
So, yeah. One thing, though, that I have noticed over the past few weeks and even the past month is that the newer cameras that the city council gave you the authority to install on the city's edges from Flock Systems, those have been coming into play more, haven't they?
They have been. I think realistically the reason you've heard a lot recently is because we recently did a report for the city council and we highlighted some of the successes that we've had. But even since putting that report together, we've had a number of significant cases that we've attributed either wholly or significantly to the LPR cameras. And they really are, you know, a game changer for law enforcement. And it could be something as minor as a hit and run that ultimately we're able to get cleared, or it could be a homicide or a shooting investigation that we're able to, you know, locate a vehicle, ultimately determine who the suspect is, and put bad guys in jail. And that's really what we use them for.
Right. I know that when you first asked to have the program installed, there were a lot of questions about that. And in terms of like individual liberties, whether they would be infringed. Are you finding more understanding about that now after the year that the program's been in effect?
I think so. There are folks out there that I still have questions and may be suspicious of them. What I will say is I've not had really anybody come to me with any concerns after we have implemented the cameras and we've been using them. You know, I think as long as we are transparent with what we're doing, the fact that we only keep the data that the cameras collect for 30 days, and if we don't search and we don't use it within that 30 days, it's just gone. You know, other than notifications on, you know, wanted vehicles, wanted people who are missing or cars that were stolen or something like that, I mean, that's really all the alerts we're getting. Other than that, it's literally a picture of your license plate that's sitting in a database that after 30 days goes away. So, you know, hopefully, I guess my ultimate goal is for folks to be more accepting of the cameras because they have been here for about a year now. And, you know, there's not been any data breaches, there's not been any misuse of data. You know, hopefully folks, you know, what we were saying we're going to do with it before we implemented them, I'm hoping they're realizing that's exactly how we're using them.
Right. And you're kind of limited from technology as well in terms of like if people think, oh, they're just going to hold on to that forever and ever, because those are pretty big files, aren't they?
They are. And it's actually interesting because I know there's some legislation that's been going through the state of Illinois that is the length of time they're allowing police agencies to keep this data is significantly longer than we keep our data with Flock Safety. And I don't hear necessarily the outrage about that, but I'm like, well, if you looked at Illinois law is allowing departments to keep this information for years. We're 30 days. If we don't use it, you know, it goes away.
Yeah.
And we've had cases where, you know, we've gotten the report 30 days after the fact, and we just don't have the ability to search the cameras because that information is no longer there.
Right, exactly. It's in a little way, it's a little similar to another program that you've instituted over the past couple of years, where it's like a database of people with the doorbells, you know, like the cameras for their doorbells. I mean, and that's basically been on an as-needed basis, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, if a crime has occurred in a certain area and we have our information that says, okay, well, there were cameras, you know, these within two blocks, these are folks that have cameras, we'll reach out to them and say, hey, would you mind giving your cameras a look, see if you see something suspicious? Or we may go individually to somebody and say, look, we think they came by, could we take a look? You know, again, that's all voluntary. Those are folks that are just concerned about the safety of their neighborhood and the community, and they're willing to help us out.
Yeah, and the most significant time that something like that came into play was last year during the Tim Bleefnik trial.
There was a lot of you know, I'm still amazed at the work that they were able to do and the video footage they were able to get in that. But yeah, you're exactly right. We never know what we're going to see or what role it may play in an investigation. So that's why we have to try to go through everything that we possibly can.
Right. We're coming up. It's 9:51. We will be back with more with Quincy Police Chief Adam Yates here on the Mary Griffith Show on WTAD. Welcome back to the Mary Griffith Show. I'm Scott Hardy, in for Mary. We're coming up on 9:54 here on this Tuesday. And, of course, the Mary Griffith Show, sponsored by Harvest Ridge Coffee. Pick up a cup of coffee today from Harvest Ridge at a location near you. Alongside is Quincy Police Chief Adam Yates. And wanted to get something. We were talking during the break. Have you had any more instances of funny money, I guess, counterfeit money? Have you had any more instances of that showing up?
I know we've had some folks reach out with some questions. I'm not sure we've had any reports of actual fraudulent bills that have been accepted. You know, the point of our putting the information out was literally just so people were aware. And they could, if they're working in higher denomination bills, they can take a look at them just a little bit closer. You know, maybe educate themselves on the security features that come with $100 bills, $50 bills. And we just don't want anyone to be taken advantage of. So it was literally just a, hey, this is out there, you know, kind of keep your eyes, you know, peeled and pay a little closer attention. I'm not aware of any more reports that we've gotten. So, you know, hopefully we're putting that information out helps combat that. But if anybody does end up with a bill that they're suspicious about, they're more than welcome to give us a call.
Right. And for those who might think, well, how the heck wouldn't you know if something is counterfeit? Well, one, they're getting better at reproducing these bills, right? Criminals are, right?
They are. And they also have tricks that they use because they'll include a fraudulent bill in with a fistful of legitimate bills. And so unless you specifically take one out and take a look at it, and I've had a couple conversations with business owners, and you know, they're obviously concerned, and they should be, but I tell them, you know, when you get 100, just take a look at it. You know, I mean, rub it, make sure it all looks like it's right. I mean, they're not perfect, so you can usually tell when they're fake. It's just when they try to get them to you quickly and then with other bills, sometimes you miss them.
Yeah, and that was my other point, that if somebody's in a hurry and wanting change and this and that, it can distract them enough to where you get the counterfeit, and then off they go. So.
Right, and we'd much rather you figured it out at the point of sale and not accept it than get a call from your bank when you go to make the deposit that says, hey, you had, you know, a fraudulent bill in your drop. You know, because then you're just out the money. And you know, we're still going to look into it, but I can't guarantee reimbursement on anything like that.
Right. Do they still have the little strip inside?
They do. Okay. Yep. I think they start those in the $20 bills, and then they go up. And that's, I think, one of the key things maybe people don't know. But the little strip, I mean, the one, there's a little strip, but if you look at it real close, it actually says what the denomination is. Okay. So if somebody washes a 20 and prints 100 on it, it's going to look legit, but you look at that strip and it's a $100 bill, but it says 20 in that little strip, you know that something's off.
Yeah, and it's a little strip. It's like plastic almost, but it's like if you like feel the bill itself, you'll feel it, and then like Chief said, you can actually see it for yourself. There,
yes, so. Yeah, you might need a magnifying glass, but it's there.
Yeah, especially the older we get. Exactly.
Right.
In the few minutes left, we are coming up, of course, on the July 4th holiday, and I imagine you and your officers are going to be busy on the roads.
We are always busy on the 4th of July. Obviously, you know, we want everybody to have a good time, but we want everybody to do that safely. There's going to be barbecues. There's going to be block parties. You know, that's great. That's part of what we enjoy about the city of Quincy. You know, every year it comes down to fireworks. You know, we get a lot of complaints about fireworks. You know, I tell people if it goes up in the air or it explodes, it's illegal in the state of Illinois. So, you know, I've kind of given the officers, encouraging them to write more tickets this year for fireworks violations, because they really are just community and public safety issues. You know, we've had fires that have been started because of fireworks. Obviously, with the heat the way it is and the lack of rain, you know, we don't want any kind of grass fires that start a house on fire. And it comes down to quality of life. You know, at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night when I'm trying to go to bed because I got to get up and go to work the next morning and the neighbors, you know, shooting off fireworks next door, it can just be an issue. So we just ask everybody to be respectful, recognize that fireworks are illegal in the state of Illinois, and you know, I guess if you're going to go ahead and do it anyway, don't be surprised if an officer shows up and writes you a ticket.
Okay, so you are then saying that there's going to be an increased amount of enforcement for fireworks.
I don't know that I would say there's going to be an increased amount of enforcement, because sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes we get the calls after the fact, or they're just anonymous calls, hey, fireworks in this area, and we get there, they're not going on. But I've encouraged the officers that, you know, if you come upon a situation and you can write a ticket or not write a ticket, the recommendation is going to be to write the ticket. And unless you have a very good reason on why you wouldn't, and with fireworks, I think it'd be hard to come up with a good reason to not write a ticket in that case.
Right. And you're also going to be looking for drunk drivers as well.
Yeah, there's always the, like we said with the barbecues, there's going to be folks that are going to have a couple drinks and going to make their way out and about. You know, again, I want everybody to have a good time, but, you know, designated driver, plan ahead, you know, Uber, Lyft, whatever you have to do to get where you're going safely. We just want people to do what needs to be done so that everybody can enjoy the 4th of July safely.
Yeah, yeah. And then you can see the statistics. You publish them and give them to us about the fact that just how dangerous drunk driving really is.
Yes. Drunk driving, reckless driving, driving distracted. Those are really, you know, the issues. When you're on your cell phone, you know, you're just as dangerous as a drunk driver if you're too busy texting or on Facebook, whatever. So, yeah, it just comes down to traffic safety. It's important, and we want everyone to get where they're going and get there safely.
Yeah, you might want to have an officer here at 4th and Main when people are turning off the bridge, because a lot of people will come over and they forget that they can't be on their phone.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yep. It's I tell you what, the distractions that come along with the new technology are, you know, they're frustrating because they're getting people hurt and injured. So, yeah, just be cognizant of what you're doing behind the wheel.
Adam Yates, thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott.
This has been the Mary Griffith Show. Coming up, news is next from Fox.